Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Read the headlines, and Mexico looks out of control. You can certainly argue that it is. Nearly 29,000 dead in a brutal drug war. Corruption, kidnapping, an American killed while jet skiing on the border, the Mexican investigator beheaded. And then there are the other headlines. Foreign investors flooding in, Mexico's stock market at an all-time high. How does this all fit together? This hour, On Point, right across the border. What's going on with Mexico? You can join the conversation. What is going on with Mexico? Are you investing? Are you fleeing? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in a few minutes from a top Mexican observer and from General Barry McCaffrey, former U.S. drug czar, who has warned of a Mexican narco state across the border and maybe beyond. But first, joining me from Houston, Texas, is Angela Corchega, Border Bureau Chief for Belo Television. Angela, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
And with us from Annapolis, Maryland, is Samuel Logan, Senior Writer for the International Relations and Security Network, founder of the online intelligence network Southern Pulse. Sam, good to have you back as well.
Thanks, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Angela, first to you. I mean, just the headlines today, more than 100 tons of marijuana seized near Tijuana, 7-truck convoy, big gun battle, and a huge haul of marijuana headed for the United States. Those headlines on the same day that Mexico's stock market is at an all-time high. What's going on here, Angela? How do these two coexist?
Well, it almost sounds like they're two Mexicos. For those of us who live on the border, those headlines are not unusual. The running gun battles, the drug seizures, and the murders that are just the body count that continues to grow. But you do see Mexico as a vibrant business community still, although there are some troubling signs. Some business executives surveyed this summer did consider that drug violence was a threat to the economy. But, you know, for many investors, Mexico continues to be in a very attractive place. It's the proximity to the U.S., the very strong trade ties, and the historic ties, especially along the border with the factories, the manufacturing plants that produce products that head to the U.S.
So you've got that going on at the same time. It can look like a war zone at the border and pretty well beyond. Here's an interview with NPR's Jason Beaubien with one resident of talking about violence in Reynosa, a once peaceful Mexican city along the Texas border.
It's not officially declared a war, but we are in a war zone. Most of the people stay home after 6, 8 o'clock at night. Just don't go out. You take your precautions because once in a while you hear a bunch of shootings and things like that. Not only official and city people, inversionistas, people that have businesses from Tampico, from Matamoros, Reynosa, Laredo, are going to the United States because of this insecurity.
29,000 people dead in Mexico since the president there, Calderon, declared war on drug cartels in 2006. That's a big number. 11 mayors killed in just not too long a time here. Lots of journalists dead. Others sort of trembling before the drug cartels asking what to do. And all this really shoved right up against the U.S. border. Here's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Sam. This is early September at the Council on Foreign Relations, saying the drug cartels in Mexico were mounting something like an insurgency.
We face an increasing threat from a well-organized network drug trafficking threat that is in some cases morphing into or making common cause with what we would consider an insurgency in Mexico and in Central America.
Sam Logan, help us out here. We were talking with Mexicans recently who were kind of saying, you know, off the record, they're worried about civil war. On the other hand, Mexico just issued a 100-year bond. That's about as long as it can get. And, you know, in the blink of an eye, $1 billion in foreign investment poured in. Those don't seem congruent.
Well, that's exactly right, Tom. I would agree with that. There does seem to be two Mexicos going on. And when I look at the consideration of two Mexicos, I think there's two points that are important to consider. The first is that most of the violence is discriminate. That is, most of the people that are targeted by these organized armed groups are targeted because they are in one way or another involved in the drug trafficking or some other sort of illegal activity. And the second point is that there is a difference between threat and risk. The threat remaining constant across the country or in certain pockets of violence, the risk is different for different types of investors or individuals. You know, people who live there, the risk is obviously much greater than a investor, for example, from China who is visiting Tijuana to look at putting a plant in place with the proper security and so on. So there's different levels of risk that I think are important to consider.
Different levels of risk, but if we're talking about corruption, I mean, Calderon, the president, just has announced a plan to sort of to try and remake all 2,000 police departments across all of Mexico.
Correct, yeah.
You say discriminate, but of that 29,000 dead, 8,300 is just this year, and I'm reading nearly half of them are civilians. Yet we've got businessmen who once went down to Mexico all the time who now won't go.
Mm-hmm.
What can it be? Is the business bottom line here that Mexico is going to be stable in spite of the size of this other Mexico you're describing?
Well, I think the bottom line on the investment side is that it's long-term investment. People are looking maybe 5, 10, 15, or 20 or so or more, maybe years down the road. Yeah, it's true. I know businessmen who live in Laredo who have stopped going to Monterey to do business. They make phone calls now.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a good idea.
We've heard about mayors, Mexican mayors, along the border who cross over to the United States to sleep every night because they don't trust their own police departments. Corrupt police have tortured and killed mayors.
That's true. That's true. The municipal police across Mexico have a long history of corruption. And at the municipal level, it's very difficult to maintain a solvent professional police group. You know, less than 400 of the 2,439 municipalities across Mexico don't even have police. And there's a number that have less than 20 police officers for the whole municipality, which would be something akin to a county in the United States. So there's definitely a challenge at the local level for police. And they're very easy to corrupt because they're not paid very well. And they have constant contact with the very people that they're trying to, you know, arrest and investigate and so on.
Right.
So it's a very complicated situation at the local level.
No kidding. Here's an interview from CNN last Thursday. This is Tiffany Hartley, whose husband was allegedly killed by a drug cartel gang while jet skiing at Falcon Lake on the Texas-Mexico border. Said she recalled meeting Rolando Armando Flores Villegas, the lead Mexican investigator in the case, who was recently found to be beheaded.
He sat right next to me. We talked through translator, and he just seemed like a really good guy who really wanted to just do good for his country. You know, it definitely makes me worried that nobody's going to want to take over.
That nobody's going to want to take over. Here was Hillary Clinton talking about this case, this murder, on Good Morning America, ABC, last week.
This is a terrible tragedy, and obviously we're sickened by it, as we are with the spike in violence that has gone on in Mexico, directed primarily against innocent Mexicans, as well as the inter-tribal warfare, if you will, among the drug clans and crime organizations.
Inter-tribal warfare, said the Secretary of State. We heard her use the word insurgency earlier. The president came back the next day and said, no, not that bad. Hillary Clinton asserting again in San Francisco just in the last couple of days, yeah, it looks like insurgency. Angela, you're there in Houston, Texas. As I said, we talked to a pretty prominent Mexican recently who said he was seriously worried about civil war. Now, that's a different thing than drug war, I guess. Or is it, Angela?
Well, I mean, when you look at it for people on the ground, I'm based on the border, and you do see these pockets of lawlessness controlled by the different cartels where you can't cross into those territories without fearing for your life if you belong to a rival group. Or sometimes, as we saw in the case of people traveling through there between Monterrey and Reynosa, you've had narco blockades where these groups set up their own checkpoints and question people and decide who gets to come into the city of Reynosa or not. So they are de facto governments in some cases. And so civil war, because you have different groups fighting each other and the civilian population caught in the middle, and entrenched organizations where you have generations of people involved in the drug trade, not just smuggling, but, you know, money and gun running and people, let's be frank, on both sides of the border involved in this type of activity. So it does apply, especially for the people who live on the border.
Sam, what does it mean for the United States? I mean, it's American drug demand that these cartels are feeding, but we've got some kind of war right at our border. Do you see an effective U.S. response to this at the moment, Sam, or what should it be?
Well, the response could be effective if we cared more about it inside the Beltway in Washington. I think the supply side focus on this so-called war on drugs that began in Colombia has essentially pushed the front lines north from Colombia to our own border. And part of the thing is when Secretary Clinton goes on record calling it an insurgency, that in my mind indicates that she's not paying very close attention to it. Arturo Valenzuela, who works under her as the head of the Western Hemispheric Affairs Office in the State Department, I think came out maybe within the day to help, I think, smooth over mm-hmm. some of the ruffled feathers in Mexico after her statement. And she claims that people who are being killed are innocent. Well, that could be partially true, but a lot of the people that are being killed, again, are involved directly or indirectly. Are we paying close attention to what's going on in Mexico? Yeah, I think in the media and people especially living on the border are. But inside D.C., I don't see it as a top bullet point still. You look at the Merida Initiative, some of the support that we want to...
This is when President Bush sat down with the Mexican president to say, we'll help you on the drug war.
Yeah, but a lot of that is rhetoric still, I think, Tom. When it comes down to it, is the money actually flowing? Well, some has gone, but most of it has not. And there's concerns, and I think rightly so, over human rights issues with the Mexican military. And there's also concerns with the historical grievance that has existed between the two countries that goes, all the way back to the Mexican-American War, if you talk to some people. So it's a complicated situation in terms of a bilateral relationship. When we're not talking business with Mexico, which tends to go fairly well, and we start talking politics, it gets prickly and it's difficult.
Politics or guns. Samuel Logan, founder of Southern Pulse, joining us from Annapolis today. Sam, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Mexico's murder and mayhem and Mexico's future. It's got drug wars, mass murder, beheading, whispers of insurgency, civil war, and foreign money piling in for the long haul, stock market at an all-time high. Angela Cocherga is with us from Houston, Texas. She's Border Bureau Chief for Belo Television. There knows that strip extremely well and more. With us right now as well from Washington is Arturo Alvarado Mendoza, sociologist, focus on human rights, the rule of law in Mexico, professor at El Colegio de Mexico, and we're very happy to have him with us today. Professor Alvarado Mendoza, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So we're trying to make sense of what we're seeing. We could use your help. I'm reading here. This is Robert Bonner writing recently. He's a former administrator for the Drug Enforcement Administration in the U.S., professor, a commissioner for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. And he wrote in the Wall Street Journal, he said, simply put, the Mexican government is in a fight to the death with powerful drug cartels. And it's an urgent national interest to the United States that Mexico prevails. What do you think of that characterization?
I think it's partially true. I mean, the Mexican government, the present federal administration, has been launched, a strategic drug war against all kinds of drug gangs, mm-hmm. from small cartels to, major international cartels. But the fight is still not clear on whether they are really pushing into the war against certain big cartels from the border areas and from the northwest and from other places in the all throughout the country in Mexico.
29,000 people dead and all this violence along the border and officials corrupted and officials dead and the police being remade from the ground up, all 2,000 police departments. It can sound from outside like Mexico falling apart. On the other hand, its murder rate with all that is still, way below the highest murder rates in Latin America. So
yes.
What's going on? Is it falling apart or is this just a sideshow? Can it really be?
Well, there are several, dimensions of this problem. On the one hand, the 29,000 dead that you can, summarize from the beginning of the Calderón's administration.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Just show some of the trends that you can see through the drug war. But there is an overall increasing trend of violence in most urban settlements in Mexico that has to be taken into account. Mexico has gone through several structural changes and violence, not only homicide violence, but interpersonal violence and even suicidal violence, have been increasing slowly but steady in most of the cities during the last 5 to 6 years. And this trend of, of death, war-related killings started early on during the Fox administration. So this is not completely new. This is a trend that is fed both by the inter-drug lords war.
Right.
To control certain parts of the territory or to control the borders where they smuggle drugs to the United States. And also, this is fed by a strong push of the federal administration, both through the military and to the federal police, to fight these drugs. But the point is that there is an increasing trend of violence at all levels in Mexican urban settlements. And this is an issue that is, that is not clearly covered through this thing, and it's a major concern for several analysts and public health analysts.
It looks like a war zone along the border, and we're reading just today in the Washington Post, maybe you saw it, the spilling into the United States, drug cartel setting up an office in San Diego. U.S. authorities tapped their cell phones and found all kinds of, wild stuff going on. Just one wiretap, they got a cartel leader who was a former homicide detective from Tijuana negotiating with a Mexican state judicial police officer about a job offer to lead a death squad in Mexico, but doing this from San Diego. This is from inside now, Professor, the United States.
Yeah. That has been also happening for a long while. And as you can see, during the last 3 or 5 years, the federal administration in the United States having also been following a major investigation and drug bust and detentions of Mexican and binational drug cartels. I can just point to one into the Michoacan family that was taken, mm-hmm. One of the biggest operations taken from the Homeland Administration and the FBI, and they caught more than 36 people in like 7 states in the U.S., plus the people that was detained in Mexico. So this is an issue that is, multinational. The main problem that we have now in Mexico is that the battle is running in the streets, mostly in the Mexican borders,
mm-hmm.
The city borders.
Right.
But this is not only one of the main problems that we are having. And on the one hand, the federal administration is trying to fight this thing and control the issue of, collateral damage that they have been mentioned in
sure.
most of the press, because there are several civilians that have been dead and they are not drug-related kills.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I want to recall something, someone mentioned a couple of issues that are related also to the economy. The increasing rate of extortions and kidnappings, not only in the border, but more in major cities in Mexico.
In Mexico City itself.
In Mexico City to a point. This is a paradox, because Mexico City was like the icon of violence during the last 15 years.
Mm.
And it was politically targeted as being one of the most violent cities. But you can see now that it's almost a safe haven for everybody.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You don't see, the homicide rate in Mexico City is below 8 for 100,000. Against Ciudad Juarez, that is more than 130 for 100,000, which compares this city to major areas like in Cali in Colombia or Recife in Brazil or mm-hmm. Rio de Janeiro. Mm-hmm. So this is a really violent situation in a small city. While in major mm-hmm. cities in Mexico, you don't see these homicide trends.
That's lucky for
but
now.
But what mm-hmm. you see is an increasing rate of kidnappings and extortions. And the most worrisome part is that these are going impune. The capacity
with
of
impunity,
the,
yeah.
With impunity. So mm-hmm. the capacity of the police and the judiciary to really fight this back and establish a rule of law and respect the human rights for the population is still way below the necessities of the country.
Angela, there's the border. And inside Mexico at the border, the amount of weaponry, of course, much of it from the United States, feeding that drug demand, but with a lot of drugs. But it's so high, and you've got people in Washington saying, this is beginning to look. That Pentagon study, last year, said, this looks kind of like Pakistan or Afghanistan, where you've got elements of failed state, American border guards, all these weapons. It looks so hot sometimes, Angela, you can imagine kind of a military clash at the border between the U.S. and cartels or something. Is there a risk of that?
Actually, it's strange. Along the border, we're talking about the two worlds. I mean, the Mexican side, there are cities that are very, very violent, and some in near South Texas where there are pockets of lawlessness. We have Juarez as kind of a free-for-all, and there has been some of that collateral damage people talk about. Not everyone who has been killed is involved in drug trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
We have children. We have families being wiped out if one member might be involved. But you do see very, very safe cities. Most of the U.S. cities on the Texas side of the border and other parts have some of the lowest crime rates in the U.S. So people on the U.S. side are not feeling that threat. But those who cross into Mexico see that other world, and it is troublesome. And you have U.S. citizens going into Mexico to visit family members, children who are being killed. We talk about the man who was jet skiing with his wife who we believe was murdered, David Hartley, but there are other U.S. citizens who've been caught up in this violence as well. And so it does hit close to home, yet there people do not feel threatened once they cross onto the U.S. side of the border. There's a real sense of safety, and that's because we have rule of law and strong institutions and a police force that functions. And that's really what Mexico is striving for, and it's not obviously going to happen overnight.
Well, I mean, it's great that that's here, but then we saw the numbers about kidnapping in Arizona, and everybody worries about spillover. Rob, in Nashville, Tennessee. Rob, you're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment about, I think, the lack of connection with either our government or even the nation as a whole. I grew up on the Mexican border in El Paso, Texas,
mm-hmm.
and spent, you know, my early teens going over there to either eat or go to the discos and have fun, where it was just a kind of a free flow. And
sure.
You couldn't pay me to step over the border today, even in the daylight. I feel like I was there in June visiting my folks, and there was a shootout literally across the river where bullets actually came into America, and it barely made a blip on the national radar. I don't even think I saw it on the national news. It was just on the local news.
Yeah. Rob, I appreciate your call. Thanks very much. And one more from Lexington, Kentucky. Bruce, you're on the air, Bruce.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I spent 7 years in the military. Of that 7 years, I spent the first 3.5 years with the Air National Guard here in the state of Kentucky.
Yes.
And we went down to Mexico, border area in Nogales, Arizona. It's a 30-mile section. It has about 285,000 illegal crossings a year.
Okay.
And I got an opportunity to go down there. My point being is that with the social issues that are going on in Mexico, I think there's always going to be big business when you talk about social issues. For example, two big people that, you know, stick out of my mind while I was down there. A lady had crossed with her sister and seven small kids.
Yeah.
They were all yellow with jaundice,
mm-hmm.
because they'd spent the last 3 days in the desert,
yeah.
trying to get to the United States to seek some sort of health care coverage for one of their younger children.
Right.
The other aspect was, gentlemen, coyotes bring in armor, weapons, drugs. There's money to be made off those just as much as there's money to be made off the expense of those women and those kids trying to get here to the United States. Somebody had to bring them to the border and tell them, you know, this is where you need to go.
Sure.
Coyotes are big business. And I think that when you look at a permeable border with the United States and Mexico being on the verge of a failed state, and that's exactly what it is, there's too much money with illegal immigration, money coming from the United States as a result of illegal immigration, back to Mexico being spent in the Mexican economy, that I don't think the Mexican government wants to fix this, because there is money to be made off of that system.
Of course. And, I mean, nobody can argue there's money right there, Bruce, and I really appreciate your firsthand testimony. But then there's all kinds of money here. There's big business. There's oil, and you name it, in Mexico as well. So it's all part of a big picture and as you say, a troubling one right now. One more, Bruce, or Josh, excuse me, in Somerville, Massachusetts. Josh, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. Obviously, I've been living and working in Mexico for the last 4 years, going to and from the Boston area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the questions that has to be asked is, where is this drug money going, and at what point does it intersect and intertwine with the legitimate economy? There certainly is two Mexicos that I've seen, one one is which is quite peaceful, another which can be touched by violence, you know, quite rapidly. But mm-hmm. I think there's also a certain point in which this money is going somewhere and is intertwining with the legitimate businesses to the point where even those involved in business there and real estate development and other investments don't even know that they're laundering drug money. And I think you can't have a discussion about the nature of business in Mexico and the drug war seen as a duality, the government fighting the drug cartels, but they are incredibly linked. And I don't think you can, if you don't separate the money, start looking at money and figuring out where that money is going, you're not going to really get to the root of the problem. And the government, one of the big criticisms of the government, the Mexican government, is they've gone after the cartels in a military sense or law enforcement sense, but not after the money.
Right, and easy to see why that would be maybe harder, but also not so attractive. Angela, I mean, there it is. Drug money is going to flow back, and as our caller says, Josh, quickly get intertwined with the regular American economy. But how deeply, how significant is that, Angela?
It's hugely significant, and you really do have experts saying that if the U.S. and Mexico want to attack this problem, they really do need to target that drug money. On both sides of the border, obviously easier on the U.S. side, but we see that in Mexico for the first time authorities being trained on how to track some of this money. But the caller's correct. It gets intertwined quickly and into the legitimate economy, whether it's tourism or other businesses, and not just along the border but throughout Mexico. So that's going to be a huge task, but one that has to be tackled if you do want to hit at the heart of these organizations.
Arturo Alvarado Mendoza, you heard us quoting earlier the Observer saying it's a fight to the death over the drugs and drug cartel. Is it clear who's winning? Is the government winning this drug war?
Well, this is I don't agree on the way to seeing who's winning this drug war.
Okay.
Because on the one hand, this is the first time that the Mexican government really, established a policy to make a war against organized crime and use the military and the police to really try to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Several policies that have been implemented in the last 4 years have been not really successful as policies.
Mm-hmm.
There are some policies that have to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some other issues that we still don't know what is going on. For instance, on the one hand, during the last 3 years, the federal government has been putting down or running down organizations that will disrupt most of the drug cartel trade routes. On the other hand, they have been capturing important drug lords. There are up to 3 important drug lords.
Mm-hmm.
They are still trying to get through the Mayor drug lords or to the Matum or 3 Mayor gangs. But that, I think, is going to be continuing. And probably within the next 10 months to a year, we'll see another big captures of drug lords. The point is this going to going to point out to the federal government winning a war? Where, on the other hand, and this is another important point, drug distribution at all levels in all throughout the country is still running. If you go to any tourist spot,
mm-hmm.
if you go to a major city, a bar, or a major sporting event, you can buy legal and illegal drugs
mm-hmm.
all the way through the places. So this is one point that the government has not been able to really even start it, to run a good policy. So I wouldn't say that someone is winning or losing the war. I don't know what is happening really in the side of the drug lords, because you can see lots of killing. You can see that the fighting power that they have, the firepower, has been really amazing. But on the other hand, the government is increasing its power and is getting technical support and training from several other countries, especially from the United States. So,
Arturo Alvarado Mendoza, stand by if you'd be good enough. Angela Cocherga, we're really grateful for you, to you for being with us today from Houston with Belo TV there. Thanks, Angela.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Mexico's murder and mayhem and Mexico's future. It's got drug wars and mass murder, beheading, whispers of insurgency, and foreign money piling in for the long haul. We've been joined from Washington by Arturo Alvarado Mendoza, sociologist, a professor at El Colegio de Mexico. We're joined right now as well from Seattle, Washington by General Barry McCaffrey, former director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy for President Clinton, 1996 to 2001. He warned last year that Mexico may become a narco state in the next decade. General McCaffrey, thanks very much for being with us.
Tom, good to be with you.
Since your warning, are we moving closer to or away from that narco state vision?
Well, that statement outraged a lot of Mexican authorities who, I might add, are correct in pointing out the dissimilarities that exist between Mexico's situation and other models. They were also outraged. Secretary Clinton just compared them to Colombia at a similar phase of internal threat. I think the bottom line is it's hard to imagine at any point the Mexican armed forces being rolled by drug cartels, the five major cartels, at any given point of on the ground.
Okay.
So I don't think that's going to happen. The question is, the poor Mexican people who are so vital to our national security, our economic future, who are so closely intertwined with our own culture, will they lose heart? And during the next presidency, mm-hmm. will they say, let's step out of this battle to implement the rule of law here in Mexico and let it go? So, as I look at this tremendously courageous Mexican leadership, President Calderon, Secretary Genaro Luna, the federal police.
Neck deep in this fight now.
Oh, my God, 30,000 dead. There are points and places in Mexico, certainly Ciudad Juarez being one of them, where it's immensely more dangerous than anywhere in Kabul or Baghdad. So they're hanging in there, but what will the next Mexican president be willing to do, given the sort of the polling data seems to indicate the Mexican people want the rule of law, admire Calderon, but think he's losing.
But at this point, General, even if the next administration, let's say, backs off of all-out drug war, if you would, let me read something. You mentioned Juarez, and we've got a web comment here from Lucinda Vargas. She's down in Juarez. You may know her. She's director there of the Plan the Strategic Plan for Juarez. She says, an incomplete picture is being portrayed here, since it's being conveyed that all the violence is contained to those involved in illegal activities. And Lucinda writes, the crime syndicates are diversifying their criminal activities into areas outside drug trafficking. In a country where rule of law is weak or simply non-existent, the criminals know they have an upper hand, she writes, General. She says statistics on kidnapping, extortion are dire. They're constricting the life of civilians, creating ghost town scenarios in cities like Juarez. Commercial businesses and doctor's offices are closing. She says, bottom line, problem of Mexico, 97% rate of impunity. I guess that is, unprosecuted crimes shows the degree of lack of rule of law. Even if the drug war is called off, is Mexico in trouble, or can it just kind of find some, harmony with the crime?
Well, Tom, that you are dead on reading her comments. One of the things that's really bothered me, I told that Mexico's this brilliant young man, Arturo Sarcon's their ambassador in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I've known him for years. By the way, most of their senior leadership are extremely capable. But there's been a tendency on both sides of the border, and I told the Mexican ambassador I was speaking to that issue here in the United States, to trivialize the problem and to say, well, come on, this is primarily criminal-on-criminal activity with a few soldiers and police caught in the crossfire and maybe an occasional civilian. That's nonsense. These criminal organizations, Dr. Alvaro Mendoza mentioned, have enormous firepower. And in the United States, they're the dominant criminal organization in over 200 American cities. And the Mexicans are properly concerned. Look,
in the United States, just said.
In the United States,
wow.
Absolutely. And, and so far they're just involved in drugs. But if you look at our own mafia experience in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, at some point, particularly if you counter their income in the drug area, they move into prostitution, extortion, bank robbery. And we're seeing some of that happening in poor Mexico. Our future is bound up in the security and economic development of Mexico and Canada. This basket, the NAFTA basket, is vital to our own future. The bottom line being, Tom, we've got to get serious about supporting Mexico's internal security.
Got to get serious, and yet they've appeared to be pretty serious for a while. Now, we'll look more at that. Let me get a call from Orlando, Florida. David, you're on the air with Arturo Alvarado Mendoza and General Barry McCaffrey. Hi, David.
This is a problem that casual drug user, until we eliminate or get the casual drug user to change their personal habits, the problem will never go away.
The casual drug user in the United States, Barry McCaffrey, you were drug czar. I mean, it's U.S. drug demand that appears to be driving the heart of the problem here. Is that right?
Well, I tell you, that's the Mexican government properly tries to remind people this isn't a problem of Mexico, it's a problem of the international community. And they're quite correct. You know, when you talk about being a drug exporting nation, the Canadians should point to us, not Mexico, because we're the transit nation for drugs going through. And having said that, it distorts the picture. The problem of the drug enterprises in Mexico, which I might have, has skyrocketing rates of drug addiction among their own young people, mm-hmm. and employees of businesses, and which is corrupting their institutions. It's not just U.S. consumption. We're also, the U.S. is a drug-producing nation. You know, we're producing enormous amounts of methamphetamines and domestically grown marijuana, some by Mexican criminal organizations, admittedly. So I never think it's useful to say, gee, if the U.S. would just stop sticking cocaine up their nose or heroin in their veins, then Mexico would be at peace. Nor is it just a problem, which is a problem, of thousands of automatic weapons coming out of the United States and going into Mexico, along with recycled money. I mean, the border with Canada is 5,000 miles, not 2,000 miles. The Canadians aren't slaughtering each other with AK-47s on the north side of the border. So just to remind, everybody's got to face their own problems honestly, and Mexico's problem is the rule of law and police institutions that have the competence and the integrity to defend the people who want to be defended.
General McCaffrey, stand by. Arturo Alvarado Mendoza, what about the idea that given the, sometimes it looks like a slaughter, the rate of killing that's accompanied the drug war, do you think it's possible that the next Mexican administration will just back off of it, say this is too much violence for us, we can't do this? And if they do, what about the rule of law? Will there be rule of law in Mexico, or then is it just a corrupt state?
No, I don't think. I mean, I think there's going to have to be a public discussion about, I mean, I'm making a balance of what is going on with the violence. We cannot live with violence. This is a point that we have to really go on to the public and say, okay, we need to establish a rule of law. And the rule of law has to be a way that we also reduce the violence, not only among narcotraffic gangs, but also among the people, which is the main point. We have to reduce impunity. We have to create judicial institutions, and also go through police reforms that will really establish a way to reduce impunity and establish this rule of law.
Can you do that when people's heads are cut off?
I just wanted to ask a couple of comments to what McCaffrey said about the drug consumption and issues. We have seen in the last 5 to 10 years an integration into the illegal drug business with another set of illegal activities like money laundering, extortions, kidnappings, and also human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big issue, not only for the case of Mexico, but also for the United States and for the international community, because what is happening now, and it's just Mexico is just one simple case, is that there is an integration of illegal businesses all the way through organized crime. And what we can see is that the drug consumption is just part of the problem, but also human trafficking and illegal immigration in Mexico and in the United States is getting integrated into this problem. So we have to develop policies that will fight not only the drug gangs or the drug distribution, but also fight all these issues. And in that way, you have to build up new policies that strengthen institutions, not only using the army or using the federal police, but also using international institutions to cope with this problem.
It sounds great, but hard to do under fire. Yes?
Yes.
Let me get
one last point that I would like.
Yes, I'm sorry, Arturo. Please go on. I'm sorry.
Okay, how to cope with violence? This is the main issue that we really had to fight on. either by establishing a rule of law that is going to take years or generations. We had to fight for this thing. But we also had to implement prevention policies all the way through the different levels in society, in the public policies, in government, in education, that we have not started in Mexico. And several of the policies against drug consumption and all these issues, of establishing the rule of law, are not going to work if you don't really educate the people in having a different alternative way of coping with conflicts and violence, and also giving them another opportunities or options that are not violent.
Yeah,
this is one issue that is going to have to come into the next federal campaign of the presidency. I don't think Mexico can afford what happened to Colombia several decades ago of having a presidential candidate killed because he was intended to fight drug war.
But you've had candidates killed already. General, I want to bring a call to you. Stowe, Vermont. Jeffrey, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I agree substantially with all the points that have been made. I have been a Mexican resident for a number of years. I was working in the early 90s for a major Mexican rubber company that was closely allied with a U.S. company. And my position as Director of Field Services enabled me to see the whole country. I happen to be married to a Colombian-born lady who has been 27 years in the United Nations, and we're both now retired.
Is this a second Colombia? Can we take lessons from Colombia, Jeffrey? Can we take lessons there?
I just heard one of your other guests saying that there is not a parallel. I would, with respect, say that there are a lot of lessons to be learned. And the outgoing, the past president of Colombia, Uribe, showed leadership qualities, having lost his own father to drug violence, in leading a war, but in very, very close cooperation with the United States, so close that some of his political opponents, now that he's out of office, want him to be tried for treason.
Yeah, so close that U.S. military was even on hand there in Colombia. General McCaffrey, what about the Colombian approach to the drug business and Mexico?
Well, caller makes some excellent points. What I was just reminding people is that Mexicans are outraged publicly, institutionally, in any comparison to Colombia. And they'll turn the conversation around back to it's your drug use and your guns and your money laundering that's causing our problems.
Yeah.
That's sort of the official take on it. It's also true that there are tremendous dissimilarities. Mexico, giant, 107 million people, oil, vital to U.S. Economy,
mm-hmm.
and hypersensitive to U.S. interference in their internal affairs. You know, the sort of the standard joke in Mexico is poor Mexico, so close to the United States, so far from God.
Mm-hmm.
So the tools of engaging Mexico have to be quite different than the Colombians. And President Uribe was a man of tremendous courage. And the Colombian National Police are probably the best national police, one of the best in the world, and certainly the best in Latin America. They've had their problems, but they're still, courage, integrity. The Colombian Army was also facing internal battalion-sized units of the FARC,
right.
The ELN. So the differences are considerable, but I think Secretary Clinton was wise to say, wait a minute, we're seeing car bombs, hand grenades. Mexican armed forces seized over 35,000 weapons last year and 3,000 military hand grenades. The attacks are coming off with 50 caliber heavy machine guns. So Mexico definitely... this is not just a criminal problem. When they execute, murder savagely 72 innocent migrants from Central America trying to get to the United States, that just reminds you of the scale of the problem that the Mexicans are struggling against.
Do you see this a threat of civil war here? And whatever you think about that, what about the investors who just poured $1 billion into a 100-year bond for Mexico? That's a vote for Mexico's future and, in some sense, for stability. What do you make of each of those, the civil war fear and that huge investment?
Well, we'd better be investing in Mexico's future because ours is bound up in it. So, you know, a lot of their income comes besides oil and agricultural products and assembling consumer items. It comes out of tourism and foreign direct investment, and they're properly concerned about it. Will this reputation of violence hamper that? And that's what's happening, obviously. So I don't think the United States should have any option but to recognize we must support the elected democratic officials of Mexico, and we got to do it in a way that pays deference to their enormous, you know, sensitivities to U.S. Interference, or for that matter, just public comments. The Mexicans are as hyper as the French and others are about foreign criticism, particularly from the United States.
We just got 10 seconds. California is about to vote on legalizing marijuana. Would that help or hurt on the stability front, General?
Oh, it's just completely crazy. For God's sakes, we don't want more teenagers smoking pot, binge drinking beer, and using ecstasy. This is a huge mistake in my judgment.
General Barry McCaffrey joining us today from Seattle, former director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy for Bill Clinton. General, thanks for being here.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
And Arturo Alvarado Mendoza from the El Colegio de México, the professor of sociology there. Professor, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.